This episode of the FitCast is brought to you by the PTAdvantage.com, an online resource to help trainers save time and make more money. It is hands down the best resource I've found. Check them out at the PTAdvantage.com. Hello and welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 284. I am Kevin Larrabee, and back with me again on the show, I think he is the league leader in FitCast appearances up until this point, Dan John. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to hear that I'm out in front, yeah. And I'm ready and willing to take on any newcomers, these young pups. I will destroy them with FitCast interviews.
Well, here's the deal. Like, we get requests a lot, and you seem to always be the most requested, or the, you know, this is the blowing smoke part where I say, you're the most loved guest of all time on the FitCast. You get the most requests via email and say, yeah, I want to hear more about what Dan John has to say.
Okay, great. Well, you know,
so whoever you're paying to send those emails in, just keep
just
the checks going.
The same thing. Yeah.
Well, we got a lot of questions for you, and thank you to everyone on Facebook and Twitter for submitting stuff on there. And we're going to get started with a really great question from Greg. What does he think the most important qualities are for a coach to be effective and a, quote, good coach?
You know what? I'll be honest, and this isn't blowing smoke up your readership. That list of questions is solid. I mean, I was really happy. I looked at a couple of them and I'm like, hey, this is a good question. And I'm thinking this first. If you don't mind, maybe break it into a couple of parts, but let's go with part one. Think of it three ways. Think of it, who are you? You know, kind of, if you will, it's almost like a Frank Sinatra, doobie doobie doo, okay? Who are you? You know, what do you know? And then third is savoir faire. But the first one is huge to me. I mean, who are you? I think every listener, if you're a coach, your life story really has to impact how you coach. For me, I've always been guided by really quality people. I mean, starting from my brothers, and I always give a nod to, you know, Gary and, well, all of them, Ray, Phil, Rich, and my neighborhood people, Dick Knottmeyer, Bob Lahotti, Coach Ralph Mon, Dave Turner. Many, many people have always been very good and very good with their time with me. Always had a bit of humor. So part of who I am is reflected by my coaches. So in my style of coaching, I can be wholehearted and I can be a little humorous because that's the style I know. You know, we get things, who are you? I also can't ignore that I'm a Virgo, that I'm Irish Catholic, that I'm a Democrat, that I'm a moderate, that I believe in the absolute dignity of every human person, and this and that. So who I am also influences. I was born in California. I live in Utah. You can't ignore these kinds of influences. The fact that the place where my dad was working got closed down, and I had to make a decision to either follow my brothers into military service. And of course, you know, two of my brothers are disabled from Vietnam, which is rough, or roll the dice and try to get a full scholarship. Well, I rolled the dice and got the scholarship. When I coach, that's partially who I am. Now, I know, I mean, people are going, oh, he's always bragging about himself. I'm not bragging about myself. I'm saying those stories that I just told you impact who, it's who I am. And you have to be, it sounds like a little song from the 50s, you've got to be true to yourself. You know, you've got to be absolutely true to who you are. And when people try to be somebody else, Pavel's my good friend, but sometimes I'll be at a workshop with kettlebells and someone will try to act like they're from Russia. And it's like, wait, hang on. You can't be you can't be Pavel. And if you try to be me, and I don't know why the hell you'd want that, you fail miserably. You have to be, first and foremost, you have to be you. It had to be you. Sorry, that was free. You don't pay extra for that. Second, what do you know? Now, for me, I basically try to lump most of my education under two houses: the authorities that I've learned from, Coach Ralph Mon, tremendous coach. I still follow the bulk of his wisdom in my general coaching. John Powell gave me the details of how to coach large groups of discus throwers at once. Why do I follow Coach Mon and John Powell's methods in coaching the discus? Because they know a lot more than I do. And it'd be idiotic for me to do anything like reinvent the wheel. Okay, if that, then it, that has to make sense. The second thing, of course, what I go with deductive logic. What are the best doing? That's what I should be doing. When I read about what other discus coaches are doing, other lifting coaches, other strength coaches are doing, I look to see exactly where do I line up with them. I have a certain measuring stick. I use a little kind of, I hate to call it a formula. It sounds too fancy. But what I do is I look at a special program. I kind of go in and break it out a little bit and say, okay, I'm doing this, but boy, hey, you know what? I'm not doing that. So I change things up. So what do you know ties into who you are very closely, and this is what I mean. You can go to one of those damn workshops where you learn the Olympic lifts in three hours, or you can do like I did, and 3 weeks after you saw your first snatch in person being a weightlifting meet, weighing in, stepping onto the platform. That's how I learned to Olympic lift, you know, and it took me probably another 17 years to get good at it, but that's how I did it. So for me, when someone talks about coaching the Olympic lifts, you come to my gym, you'll rarely see people Olympic lifting unless we have people who need it. And then you'll see them Olympic lifting a lot. But the thing is, because I think I understand the Olympic lifts pretty well, I can also not have you Olympic lift and get the same things that you need for your skill set, your goal set, by doing other things that are Olympic lift light, if you will. Because if you know who you are and you know what you know, you can make those big kid decisions. And of course, the third one is that savoir-faire. And it is that style of coaching. It's that hard to put your hand on. It's your, see, I think teaching, well, there's no question. Teaching is a gift. I've met many people in my life who wanted to be teachers but can't teach. And I actually believe it's an actual gift. It's I can go into theology and my own personal beliefs here, but I also think coaching is a gift. And you have to use those first two points to really inform that third point. You can't be somebody else. Now, you can certainly coach like all your mentors coached you, and you can certainly reflect on what your teachers have taught you, but you still got to be your own person. And then what you have to do is keep asking yourself what connects. I always tell personal trainers, anytime a client refers another person to you, sit down with that client and ask that million-dollar question. What is it that I do? Why did you reference me? You know, because whatever they told you is gold. If they said, I believe in X, Y, and Z as a coach, but my client, my athlete tells somebody else it's A, B, and C, I can never forget that A, B, and C is what's really influencing that person. And it's maybe not on that chart that I have on the wall or the mission statement I have on that wall, but what influenced them was this. And I got to make sure I pour some water on this, put a little fertilizer on this, and grow this, if you will. Okay. And then after that, coaching becomes, coaching is art and science to follow up on the second part of the question. I'm almost done here. Okay. But to be a good coach, and I learned this from my good friend, Rick Bojack. He's a very famous football coach here in the state. And also I see him at church every Sunday. He told me one time years ago, you can't get bored watching the same play over and over. A great coach has the ability to watch the same thing over and over. So I call it coach repetition. That's my assistant coach repetition. And then the second great skill, and this is a tough one, is you can call it, nowadays people call it minimum effective dose. Pat Flynn calls it less is more. Tommy Kono calls it the American system, but really it's the ability to say enough is enough. Charlie Francis, the great Canadian coach, if you hit a PR, see you later, good night, practice is over, enough is enough. And I think that's the next, you have to get the ability to know when you when we're done. And doing more doesn't always make you better. And I could talk for hours on this, so I'm gonna rein it in just a little bit. And of course, number three is walk the walk, talk the talk as a coach. And it doesn't mean you have to act like you're a 15-year-old when you're coaching high school. But it does mean that, you know, you stay true to those, to the standards you put up. And whatever that means. And that's gonna be 1,000 different things, but really stay true to yourself. You can't say out of one side of your mouth that you're drug free. On the other hand, you're sending someone to a Midwestern state to get something that someone cooked up in their kitchen. You can't be that person. You can't be two-faced. And because what happens over time is not only destroy your athletes physically, spiritually, emotionally, and all those other ways, but also too, you just get seen as a fraud. And boy, I tell you, if you're a teacher and a coach, you know, you are helping people touch the sky, and you don't want to come off like that. Okay.
I have to do a little bit of a follow up to that. Just talking about growing as a coach, what if anyone asks you what resources do you recommend to help people grow? Maybe if they're just, you know, getting out of college or something like that, or even if they just want to constantly get better, what direction do you point them in?
Let me give you two good things I would suggest. First off, I would consider your coaching like we would consider your training program, is that you need times for intensive work. So that's why I'm a big fan of like the Perform Better Weekend. And I work for them, so I'm going to come off as a whore right here. But that's what Greg Glassman famously called me. I'm very comfortable with the fact that going to Perform Better Weekends, you know, get there early, go to the pre-com, stay late, don't miss a session, don't miss a hands-on, sit in the front row, take notes, drink it all in. There's no way in hell you can process all the information, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter. The following Monday, you've been bumped up. I used to say that about, I always send my kids to discus camp, and people say, well, they already know how to throw a discus. I know, right. But the camp experience of throwing four times a day changes them. So one of the things, find experiences like these 4-day, 3-day, whatever, boot camp, whatever the system is. Charles Daly famous had that 1-day boot camp. Get in there, drink deeply a couple of times a year. And I'm just saying, and here's the thing, if you're a young coach and you decide to go out with me at night, remember, I'm there in the chair at 8 a.m. in the morning. If you're out drinking and boozing, you better have your butt in the seat the next morning, taking notes and paying attention. I got no problem with you guys partying and having a great time, but you show up. The second thing is this. So I would say an intensive experience, number one. The second thing would be what I call an intentional community. Now, I have it here at my house, 9:30 every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. A whole bunch of people show up. Today we had a basketball player from Westminster College. We had a woman getting ready for the Strong First Cert this weekend. We had my nutritionist was here. One of my interns was here. A guy who's starting in the industry was here. We all trained, and then we sat around and talked. A couple weeks ago, we had a Major League Baseball player. Yesterday, we had a Monday with an NFL player. We just get together intentionally. No one actually leads the trainings. Well, you can do your own training session. You can train with me. It doesn't matter. But the idea is when I'm doing a lift, I had a little issue with my back earlier in the year. And there's some videos of me. I can barely even move, but I'm doing 500 swings. But what helped me overcome that back injury was Mark telling me I need to, when I do get-ups, my back doesn't look as stiff. I start doing get-ups again. My back miraculously improves overnight. So two things. First, some kind of intensive thing a couple times a year. And number two, some kind of intentional community. Now on that, it can be done in this day and age online. Maybe you get a group on Facebook that you guys start talking about, I read this fitness book. Hey, what'd you think? I thought it was a waste of money. Oh, good. Did you come up with one thing? Here's one thing. Don't read the book. You know, that kind of thing. or you can get together people in your group. I would strongly suggest that you get people who are in a different pay grade than you, people who have different interests, different ideas. Elise, who comes and trains with us, is not only a kettlebeller, but she's also a Zumba instructor. So I don't make fun of Zumba anymore. So she shows up, she knows yoga, she knows Zumba. She explains how this is just, this move we're doing right here is the same move they're doing in yoga. So those are the kinds of things. And all of a sudden now, my brain, I'm a better coach now because of that one tiny little insight. Okay? All right. Was that helpful?
No, that's great. And this is going to be my moment to, or our moment to talk about Laree Draper and what she's doing at like movement lectures and stuff like that. Like even if you have no excuse these days with the internet to not educate, you know, even if you want to do a weekend at home on your laptop, you can do movement lectures. There's strengthcoach.com. There's Body by Bone Online. There's all these things that
you can. Well, there's your FitCast for God's sake. 240?
Yeah, 248. I know. What are we at? I don't know. 285.
Huh, seriously, I mean,
yeah.
Growing up. Am I on tap for 300?
Of course. Yeah, you just booked it. Just booked it.
Saying that. Okay.
Working ahead. The next question that we have comes from Donnie. What are Dan's most used exercises that aren't being done by most people?
You know, it's an interesting question. I think that's a good question. Now, all I can say is I don't really know if people are not doing them. But, you know, we've gone pretty much all in on, well, of course, my gym is a barbell, kettlebell, TRX, and then kind of heavy crap gym. So that's the load, the 80-pound duffel bags, the farmer bars, the sleds and stuff like that. So one of the things I think you would see at my gym, you probably see at my gym, people on the floor all the time. So I would say, I don't see, when I go to other places, people are on the floor very much. An easy way to start your workouts to get it on the floor, buy yourself that $5, $10 ab wheel. If you can't afford the expensive one at Walmart, go to Ross Dress for Less. They always have them there for $5. There, $5. So the ab wheel gets you down the ground. Just as something as simple as Tim Anderson's original strength stuff. If you know your kettlebell work, the Turkish get-up. You can roll. We do today's workout was called Bear Bear. That's where you do a bear hug with the 80-pound bag, put it to the ground, and then bear crawl away, bear crawl back, 80-pound bear hug walk. My heart was going through my ears because it's just physically exhausting for me to do it. And the people I'm working with aren't getting tapped at all. And I realize that Lancey had a 30-pound bag. So that's just not fair. I got 80, she's got 30, and she's, oh, this is fine. Of course, when we did the bear crawl, she got called out. So I would say first and foremost, groundwork. And now, if you're at an MMA gym or fighters or whatever, you probably have enough of it, but most people never get on the ground. They might do get on the ground and do crunches, but you never see them on the ground do anything else. So that would be gap number one, and that's almost universal, okay, if you're okay. And then the second one would be the carries. I don't see many gyms people carrying. And in fact, people told me they've been kind of, people think it's odd to do like a suitcase carry in a normal gym, but that also tells me, why would you ever train in a normal gym? You know, most normal gyms are just suck fests. Listen, honestly, folks, you think at $9.99 a month, you're special. I mean, well, I'm not going to go into that. Sorry. I'm a bad person. So the second thing would be the carries. We do a lot of the bear hug carries, the farmer walks. I'm not doing the waiter walks as much as I should, and there's no reason for it. The mini band walks, we put them between your socks and then walk sideways. Excellent walk there. That would be number two, the second biggest gap. And then, of course, I just don't think people are squatting deep. But, I mean, I always think that. Even today, I was working with people, and when their butt was at knee height and, you know, and higher, and it's funny because they were doing goblet squats. You can bend over to get your elbows to push your knees out, but I would much rather you put your butt down and then push your knees out. So those would be the three, I don't think. I would also argue, and this is just my own thought, I don't think people are doing enough appropriate polls. Now, you can, I'm sure you're going to get emails. I do 10,000 polls a day. Well, no, you do leaping lat pull downs. This is a different thing, you know, where you're using your body weight to pull the thing down. And it's that poor cable. A lat pull down cable should never break. Well, what snaps them? People doing jerking lat, you know, kipping lat pull downs. There, make fun of two things at once. So that's why we do a lot of TRX pulls today. Today I did 72. I did TYI sets of 8 3 times. And I got to tell you, I was getting sick to my stomach on the amount of, I'm going to use the word burn, and I apologize, on the amount of burn that I was getting in that upper weird back area. You know, I wasn't feeling good. And it just reminded me that, you know, even though I preach this stuff, I don't always do it myself. I hope that answered the question okay. I thought that was a really good question. So I guess the thing is, when I say groundwork, Donnie, what I mean is the whole family, the Turkish get-ups, the ab wheels, anything laying on the ground and getting up. The second would be, of course, all the family of loaded carries. And then finally, the deep squat and that intelligent pole working. And that would be the most, okay?
That's probably a good point to go into what you've been working on lately. So what have you been up to?
Well, in my riding life, I'm really trying to get a handle on this thing I just talked about, what you truly get from authorities. And really, I think a good coach teaches you the minimum effective dose. What's the least you can do to get to your goals? And it's funny because all of us fall into this trap where we become very minimalist. And then because of whatever, because of going to a workshop with me and I screw you up, getting some good information from a supplement company, listening to someone who's a dietitian and getting some more information, that you take this really simple thing that really worked really good and you expand it out so it's so complex you don't even understand it. Then you throw it all away again and get back to what works. So that's one of the things I'm working on right now is, you know, trying to talk to people about minimum effective dose. What was the fastest route to get the things? That's what I'm working on as a general in my coaching. And also, too, I'm trying to come up I'm trying to come up with better ways to explain to people that most of the year you should be doing a program that takes care of business. And a few times a year, you should really try to light it up. And the mistake is that almost universally, when people go to what I call bus bench programs, these programs where you can do it for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever it is, it's always fat loss. And honestly, I'm starting to think we can backdoor into this with a female client who always wants fat loss, say, you know, you go by Brett's book, you know, Strong Curves, and you're going to have a glute focus. Oh, listen, trust me. We're going to try to build your butt area, and we're trying to blah, blah. Here's your before butt. Here's the after butt. But you're going to get the same exact stuff done. But I'm starting to think that a better way to do it is what his name just went right on. Dr. George Sheehan. Dr. George Sheehan had this excellent insight about jogging. He said that jogging gets your legs in shape and then brings your heart and lungs along with it. I thought that was a very good way to look at it. I think working your butt hard 3 to 4 times a week for 12 weeks is going to really do some marvelous things to your butt and make you lose fat in the process. You follow? The problem is people fall in love with fat loss programs. So they do them 3, 4, 5 times a year. And just don't take long. You just look around. You can see what miserable failures there are. So that's the thing I'm working on the academic side. Personal side, I came to a very interesting realization the last few months, weeks. I've been doing Pat Flynn's 90-day program. And it occurred to me that I still need to keep that hypertrophy work. This is going to come up later with the older people, what the question is about older trainers. But I had let my basic hypertrophy work drop out. I was doing, you know, metabolic training, certainly, with this program. I like it. And I was doing strength workouts, which is great. But I wasn't doing that the 25 reps a day, the 25 reps that, you know, for the greater biceptalis and the over monkey lateralis muscles, you know, those 3 sets of 8 things that get some blood pumping and keep, a level of lean body mass. And I reminded myself of this at a workshop recently when I was really getting sore in my shoulders, my knee, and my hips. And it was like, what? How's this happening? And I kind of just went back. And so now I'm sprinkling that back in, and it seems to be making good results. I have a Olympic lifting meet coming up, and I'll be dropping a lot of stuff here in the next few weeks. But my thought on this was, maybe for this meet, I'll do snatch, clean and jerk, and then a little bodybuilding mix, you know, in my training. So like I might do squat, snatch, front squat, and then train like Mr. Universe, you know, the next workout, clean and jerk, train like Mr. Universe, you know, that was my idea for this meet. Just, you know, spitballing a little bit. And personally, I'm also going to probably come out of retirement at least one of my sports this year. I'm feeling pretty good.
Very cool. Let's transition into that subject you were talking about from Daniel. He wanted to know your view on training for older population. Someone who sees your videos, wants to get lifting, but doesn't have the same background as yourself. How would you program for that, for fat loss and gaining strength, while also staying safe and stable?
Hey, you know, I tell you, if you have an untrained person, I got to tell this person from the heart. It's called systematic education. And, you know, I used to talk about this in my workshops all the time. In fact, you heard me talk about it Kevin, in LA. Remember I talked about systematic education and systemic. But one of the things I like, this good question, I like it, is to remind yourself, okay, so you're starting here. In a couple of years, you're going to build on what you're learning. I remember a couple of years back, my brother Gary started coaching his son. There was no throws coach at Aragon High School. So my brother, being a good and decent man, volunteered. God bless him, volunteering at a public high school throws program. I don't think there is enough bourbon left for me to do that. Boy, God bless Gary. God bless all those school coaches who do that. He started by throwing. He started getting better and better. And he asked me, he said, you know, I'm thinking about competing. And I gave him what I thought good advice. In 4 years, you will be as good as any high school senior. And in 8 years, you'll be as good as any college senior. And Gary started doing it. He started picking up. Now he does all the throws. He's competed in the weight pentathlon. He's now in his age group, I think he's a world-class hammer thrower. I think he broke that little barrier in the last couple of weeks. So he's back to being a world-class hammer thrower after some injuries. And so this caller, what my point I'm trying to get to you is, maybe today you're a novice, but in the age of the internet, in 2 weeks, you'll be an expert. Trust me. But what I'm trying to point out, if you take it seriously and you really do try to go like to a kettlebell class, to a TRX class, to a yoga class or two, in a couple months, couple years, you'll really start to get a foundation that's very solid and you'll be able to build on it. Answering your question, if you're an older client, I strongly suggest you find a gym in the beginning that has machines. Get your 3 sets of 8 or do that Art Devaney does, where he stays on one machine. He does a set of light with 15, just so he can be at the. So when you get to 13, 14, 15, you start to feel it heat up a little bit. Then he goes heavier, and he tries to feel the heat at 6, 7, 8. Then he goes heavier one more time, and he tries to grind out 2, 3, 4, done, move to the next machine. Now, why am I telling you this? Because anybody over 25 who's untrained, with this machine, you can actually get the benefits of hypertrophy, strength gain, and fat loss very, very quickly while you start to school yourself. Now, I know most of the people listening, because this, don't have the skill set to actually finish listening to anything, but listen to what I'm saying. Use that 3 times a week to get all the wonderful benefits of hypertrophy, fat loss, and strength gain. And then also begin to master the world of weightlifting. So it could be something as simple as taking a TRX class and learning there's probably four or five things in a TRX worth your time. I would say the T, the Y, the I, the double arm row, and the single arm pulls, and the single arm pull family. For the rest of the stuff they show, I think is utter nonsense. Learn a kettlebell. Go to a course where they teach you the goblet squat. I mean, the person who invented the goblet squat, I mean, what a gift to the universe. I was watching TV the other day, and there's this new one of these bullshit programs, you know, where you spend money for 90, you know, whatever, you know, those things. You can learn the goblet squat. You know, you can learn the goblet squat by being with Kevin Larrabee at the original FitCast in LA. And it's free, bunch of losers. But, you know, you go to a kettlebell cert and you'll learn, depending on who you have. But if you learn the goblet squat and the swing, you are miles ahead of everybody else. The goblet squat, the swing, and the one-arm press, I mean, you're there. You also master the Turkish getup. If you know those TRX moves I told you and what I just said with the kettlebell, you're well ahead of everybody else. Take some time after that. Have someone teach you how to correctly press. I would say probably bench press in military. For an older guy, that's really all you'd want to do. Probably learn to deadlift. And then play with that program for a while. Master the ab wheel. Sometimes it takes two reps. And just get good at these things. And then slowly build on it. I mean, if you want to learn the Olympic lifts, I don't necessarily see, you know, whether you should or shouldn't. I don't know. But after you've mastered all that and try the old lifts, it might be a fun thing. How many years might this take you? Hey, what if it took you 5 years? You know, 5 years from now, no matter what you do, you're going to be 5 years older. It doesn't matter. So that's what I would suggest to you if you don't mind. So start training on machines if you can, 3 days a week, and then start to master these little things over time, okay?
I think it was, whether it was on this show or whether it was at a seminar, I think you said you invented the goblet squat.
I'm spitting out my coffee and water. You mean the actual truth? Yes, I did. but of course, it's so funny because there's some guy who not only invented the goblet squat, but he also invented the slosh pipe, which just cracks me up. To be able to say that sentence and not be struck down by lightning. So I called God about that. God said to me, great. We got a great relationship. He owes me $10, but we won't go into that. Yeah, sorry.
We have a good follow-up from Bill. How do you manage volume and intensity in older athletes, the around 40-year-old crowd? And he says, don't say go by feel.
Well, I think I gave you two good ideas already. Mm-hmm. Going with the classic DeLorme program, that's 10 reps at 50%, probably 5 at 75 or 70, you know, kind of a medium warm, and then a hard set of 10 at your 10-rep maximum. And by the way, with the machine, you can probably do that a little closer. With free bars, I'd back off. That's a total of 25 reps. I also gave you the idea of what Art Devaney's doing. That, what is that? When you add up 15, 8, and 4, whatever that number is, whatever it is. But it could also be 13, 8, and 3. It doesn't matter. But I like that. That's where I like my number. I'd like it to be around, 25, 30 reps in that ballpark. I usually say 15 to 25 with most, but when you get to the adult population, you certainly want that additional kind of that light set of 10 and that medium set of 5. That's really important. You could also do 3 sets of 8, the classic 3 sets of 8, which has the most research supporting it, even though it's boring as hell. Just if you just experiment with that, we've got a couple of workouts. We joke about them because we don't ever do them because they're a lot harder than they should be. So we avoid them completely. You know, my training group is just like everybody else. We're always trying to find, you know, water. Why does water always end up in a creek? It's because it's always going downhill. We're always trying to find the easiest way to get there, right? But 3 sets of 8, 10, 5, 10. The 15, 8, 4, that's your volume range. I do a workout where I go a set of 2, a set of 3, a set of 5, a set of 10 with one weight for presses. And do that once, that's 20 reps. Do it 3 times, it's 60. Do it 5, it's 100. And I will occasionally do 100 reps in the double kettlebell military press just to do so much volume. But I wouldn't suggest going crazy on volume very often, especially if you're untrained. Now, for the question you answered, I've already told you the answer. Pick 5, 6, 7, 8 global body exercises. Do it a set of 15, a set of 8, a set of 4 going up, a set of 10, a set of 5, a set of 10 going up, 3 sets of 8, judging that last set on what the load should be for the next workout. Get in on machines and do that workout, or get in on a barbell or kettlebells and do that workout. That's pretty good. Probably 2 times a week for your older client. I would also suggest in that 1 day a week where you do like a whole mobility circuit. You just kind of maybe a Bikram yoga, though, you know, you don't have to do Bikram yoga. I like going into my hot tub and stretching, you know. And then 1 day a week where you would do some kind of interval. And I would suggest maybe the day after the interval, if you can run, run, if you can cycle, if you just want to do the heavy hands kind of thing, whatever it means to you, but about 8 bouts of some kind of, we call it the great 8. It's where you start to walk, you start to pick up a little bit, you start to stride, you then extend to kind of a sprint for about 20, 30, maybe 40 meters, stride, slow down, walk, repeat that, that kind of thing. Don't put the pedal to the metal in the older population for a while. We start out fast, you know, just gradually build up. So if you have a rowing machine, you might want to row, you know, keep that row, maybe speed it up, ease off, speed it up, ease off. There's 100 references for this kind of training online. Do whatever you think. We do this one thing where we mix like swings with bear crawls or deadlifts with bear crawls to do the same kind of thing. But don't go too crazy, okay? And there's a million ideas for it. So 2 days a week, pure machine work. 1 day a week, a lot of mobility work. 1 day a week, some kind of intervalish training. Do it any way you can. That's a good way to start. If you can, move up to 3+1, 3 strength hypertrophy workouts, 1 interval. Just see how that holds up for you. Better to skim back than to add to. Okay?
Let's change it up a little bit and go with a question from Nick. He wanted to know how you approach the nutritional side of training with your high school kids. What's worked, what's not worked, and just, you know, for reference, this is something we've always kind of talked about at MBSC. We're always trying to find a better way to communicate with these athletes and get them to actually do something positive with the information that we give them and hopefully follow it. So what do you do?
It's what Rob Wolf told me years ago. And you know what's funny is I tested it on my athletes and it was true. I can say, what is ascorbic acid to my athletes? And they will say vitamin C. And they will know it prevents scurvy. And then I'll say, what's a good breakfast? And none of them has an answer. So welcome to the problem, folks. Our nutritional information is the most it's ever been in world history. There's, you know, in the Middle Ages, you didn't have these conversations, you know. But what I try to do is the more method with them. More protein, more fiber, more fish oil, more water. That's what I try to do. Or I tell them what I learned at the Olympic Training Center back in 1980. What's so complex? Protein, veggies, water. Why are we having this discussion? So ideally, I'd like to just say to them, protein, veggies, water. But then someone's going to raise their hand and say, well, I heard we should eat nightshades. Nightshades are things like tobacco, tomatoes, potatoes, and some other things I can't remember. Okay, so now see how they did it to you? See what the student just did to me? I had a perfectly simple answer, and the student went there. And I joke about it, but honestly, if you're in the industry, you know what I mean. No matter what I say, someone's hand's going to go up. I'm going to say, eat protein. Someone says, well, you know, my mother's a vegan and my dad is paleo. And it's going to be, I know. That's where we live right now. So it's a tough question. So what we have is this. It's one of the phrases I use when I talk about the exercise side. Over-conditioned and under-trained. So I get a lot of these people now. In fact, I'm trying to hold this story in my mouth, but you know, you get somebody who's they're completely beat up from this training program they did because that's what all the yuppies are doing now. They're just completely jacked up. They come to my gym and they're completely untrained. So they can go, they have a big engine and they can do all this crap that's hurting them, but they have no beauty of movement, they have no mastery. Their hips are locked up, their knees hurt. But they can do, I can do anything you want. I one time did X in 3 minutes. Yeah, but you can't touch your freaking toes, man. On the nutrition side, it's almost like we're over-educated and under-practiced. You know, the kids, they all know what to eat. We just don't empower them. We don't give them the tools to do it. Hell, every time you show up, in preschool now, they give you a piece of candy for showing up. They give you a trophy if you play it. If you're even on a team, they give you a trophy now. I mean, it's gonna be hard to turn around. You know, I'm the youngest part of the generation. You know, I mean, the most spoiled generation in American history, the baby boomers. You know, I'm at the tail end of them. And God, you know, all they did was, you know, sorry, I'm just ranting now, but. You know, we took vegetables out of the American diet and replaced it with, you know, Frankenstein vegetable oils. You know, we took, you know, no one eats rutabagas anymore. I don't know what a rutabaga is, by the way. But, you know, no one eats these kinds of foods anymore. And now we're stuck with this massive problem. I mean, you know, back in the, when all these baby boomers were smoking dope and telling us that we need to eat brewer's yeast and all this stuff like this, and that, you know, and that meat was murder and lard would make you fat. Now, you know, all these years later, we're sitting here going, oh my God, how do we get back to getting, it's funny. I'm actually telling people now to try eating bacon grease because it might be healthier than the crap they're eating. You know, I'm sorry. I'll stop. It's a tough question.
Absolutely. The next one we have comes from Colin, and he's, I think he might be calling you out a little bit. He says the following quote is attributed to you. I quote, the best program is the one you're not doing, close quote. Doesn't this type of thinking just lead to training ADD?
Well, Colin's right. It's from Charles Staley. So get your quote, but I agree with it 100%. I mean, I'll be in the gym. I mean, it happened today. I was talking with Mark, and I hear Mark's doing a program I'm not supposed to share. We're doing a professional favor for another friend of mine. And so we're studying this program and we're all in, but we're not going to share it. Okay. And I'm doing this thing. I feel great. You know, and shit, God, if you can see my Python there, you know, and my pythons are coming back. My inner maledius is the largest it's ever been in my life. My, you know, and here I am looking at this program going, oh, can I do that? Because it's a program I'm not doing. So what happens is, Colin, is simply this, man. And you're right. It does. Are you calling me out on training ADD? Dude, everything I write about is stick with the program. My last couple of men's health articles all about, we have one rule in this facility. I don't care what you're doing. You finish that program, even if it's idiocy, because then you can come back and comment on it. Whenever you go to a gym, you look around, you see people doing stuff. It's like, wow, I'm going to do that. That's why I have these little rules. For example, I'll go, you know them already, Kevin, but push, pull, hinge, squat, loaded carry, and ground work or six move, right? Okay. Are you doing all six of those movements in every training program, every workout? Are you? Well, if you're not, okay, there's a gap. We have to fix them. The second question, are you up to standard on all six of those? You know, you've got a 400-pound bench press and a 135-pound back squat. I don't want to listen to you about your training until you get that back squat up. And then the third thing, you know, you do 215 presses a workout, six pulls and one squat, and that's your well. you got a problem here. You have 27 press variations, but you only do farmer's walks. That's the only carry you do. That's the fourth thing I look at. So, Colin, the answer is this. The answer is, I don't care what you do as long as you finish it. And number two, when you assess the program, assess it through a lens that's intelligent, a repeatable, intelligent lens. First, are you doing all the basic fundamental human movements? Two, are you up to standard, some kind of standard or some kind of balance in those movements? Three, do your numbers work out by terms of repetition? I believe your press, your pull, and your squat generally should be around the same numbers, though for a lot of people like myself with a big press, I have to up my pulls more. And then number four is make sure you have approximately the same number of variations per human movement. So if you have five different press variations, you should have five different loaded carries. Five squat variations might be tough for some of you because of your background. But really, if you goblet squat, double kettlebell front squat, barbell front squat, barbell back squat, barbell overhead squat, that's a pretty good set of variations right there, right? Does that make sense? So, you know, and if you don't know how to overhead squat, why don't you learn? There, you know, there's maybe a gap for you. If you don't know how to front squat, well, why don't you learn? You know, there's maybe a gap for you. And then, you know, so that's how I do it, Colin. I hope that made sense. Two sides in my answer to that question, right? One, I insist you finish your programs, even though you're always tempted. You're always, you know, come on, Colin, talk. When you're dating the most beautiful girl at Utah State University, for example, don't you also kind of check out the freshmen when they're walking down the hall? I mean, isn't that kind of who we are as people? I mean, just nice as can be, just spitballing here.
It's being human.
Yeah. And then number two, make sure you always assess every program you just finished and every upcoming program through some lens or vision. Okay.
We got a question on the Lift a Day program. I apologize. I don't have the person to attribute it to, but the Lift a Day program, is that geared towards experience?
The One Lift a Day program. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Is that geared towards experienced lifters, or do you feel even a true novice would benefit? I know it's a high effort and high volume program, so I wonder if it's too much for a beginner to jump into, or is that the glory of the program that it scales with the individual?
Yeah, the problem, a beginner needs reps. Mm-hmm. And so a beginner is going to make progress doing anything. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. That's the nature of everything. Think about how much faster you learn a language when you first learn it. I could go months now at my age and not learn a new word in English, right? I mean, unless I went to some journal of orthopedics or something like that, and it was just a whole new language. But even then, in a couple of years, I would know, you know. So, no, it's not a good program for beginners simply because beginners need more repetitions. Do you remember coach repetition back in the first question? An NFL team might be able to practice something once or twice. Like, for example, in the high school setting, you do want to have a practice before your first game. Will you practice taking a safety on purpose? You know, having the quarterback waste time in the end zone and then either step out or kneel down. You know how many times you have to practice that play a whole year? Maybe once. But you're practicing all the important stuff every day, multiple times, multiple scenarios. With the One Lift a Day program, you should come into it understanding. Now, I think it works best with the Olympic lifts. So on Monday, you power snatch, Tuesday, front squat, Wednesday, maybe power clean. This is tough. Thursday, do your jerks, and then Saturday, have a total. That would be a good One Lift a Day. But those are all serious movements. You know, if you're doing curls on Monday, skull crushers on Tuesday, isolation, concentration curls on, you're not going to get jack out of the program. It's got to be big movements, big lifts. You know, you could easily do squat on Monday, bench on Wednesday, deadlift on Friday. And man, a lot of you would make progress on that if you have the bigger bench, the bigger squat, the bigger deadlift. But if you're a beginner benching 135 or whatever, you know, just bench 3 days a week. Just get that repetition and volume in there and get stronger by the minute. In fact, you might not have enough time on the one lift a day to get any, make any improvement off of it. It is an Olympic lifting program that heavyweights used in the late 1960s. I resurrected it in the early 90s. It worked like a charm for anybody who weighed over like 190. It's disappeared again because it does. It's very good. It's a very good way to train American lifters. But of course, you know. Yeah. So great program if you're ready for it.
And we did get a question about the differences between the RKC and SFG, but I believe we covered that the last time that you were on, so maybe we should send them, unless you want to hit on it again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was one organization about a year ago, wasn't it? About a year?
Yeah.
And there was a split. It's funny because within that year, I did a workshop for Mike Krifka out there in D.C., and I guess he got poopied on online and in emails that he brought me, you know, out to his workshop. And I thought to myself when I heard that, this is the lowest point of theology. The worst way to be a theologian is either or. It's the weakest style of theology, and I hate getting into it. Dan, are squats good or bad? Is this a good program or is it a bad program? And it really bothered me because I'm very close to the leadership of both organizations. And I have to tell you that instructing the HKC, I did with Steph out there at in Missouri, and Jim a whole bunch of times, Jim Hooper down there in Newport Beach. If for all your kettlebell needs, ladies and gentlemen, in Newport Beach, go see my friend Jim Hooper at Newport Kettlebell. Great guy. Love the guy. I was able to learn so much by doing this. I also did one down in, here and there. Now I'm embarrassed because I'm forgetting all of them. But all we did in one day was the swing, the goblet squat, and the get up. And I learned so much. I learned so much from that community. I owe that community so much. At the same time, you know, the organization was going in a direction, and it's a good direction. But for myself personally, a lot of the stuff weren't things I was – these are, you know – please, I'm not at all ripping on this progressive calisthenics stuff. I think it's fabulous. I think the flexibility stuff is fabulous. For my clients, for my people, for who I coach, it's barbell. And it's barbell, TRX, kettlebell. That's our world. I mean, that's who we are, collision athletes and other things. All, and there is no, and again, there's no good or bad. People want me to come out and say that, you know, this is or that. I can't do it. There's such quality people in the organizations. I'm very proud to be a strong first master kettlebell instructor. And with all the caveats I've already said, I'm sure I'll get an email from somebody. Guarantee it. I could almost tell you, it won't be the person I'm thinking of won't send it to me. They'll send it to one of my friends who then call me up and say, I got an email. Because can't you just call me? I mean, everyone knows my phone number. Everyone knows my email. Oh, Jesus, dan@danjohn.net. Email me. Here's the thing, though. This is part of what bothers me is that we're all big kids and we should act like professionals and be big kids. When someone has an issue, get on the phone, call, work it out. God bless us all. I got great respect. Let's be honest. When I first heard about kettlebells, I think I heard about this. I have the old strength and health from the 50s and stuff like that have kettlebells in them. But Pavel and John brought us. If you're using a kettlebell, it's because of Pavel and John. That's why. And shut up. You cannot dismiss what I just said. There are people out there saying that there's this one guy who went to the workshop, starts his own certification the next weekend. And it's like, dude, and he never acknowledges Pavel's work. It's just, you are an embarrassment. It's like in the discus, Bud Hauser is the guy who started the term. LJ Sylvester is the guy who really got us to do it the special style we use now. To pretend like I invented the discus turn that we now have would just be the height of, oh, I just, arrogance. And in this industry today, one of the leading people, okay, I'll hold off, but I'm going to be kind. I want to punch this person, but we'll just hold this for another time. I'll be kind. But let's just say both organizations have great value. I'm proud to be with Strong First Now. In fact, it was very hard for me. To move off on another tack for this person, you know, everyone thinks that, you know, it wasn't easy for guys like me when the whole break happened. Because, you know, I always know who butters my bread. I've always been a great respecter of tradition. You know, I teach religious studies. The word religion literally means to link back. So it was a hard thing for me because I owed so many people, so many. You know, my daughter Kelly is an RKC instructor. And, you know, the people were so kind to her at her UCLA cert. She's I think, the youngest person ever certified. And now this May, my daughter is going to be, my daughter Lindsay is going to become Strong First certified. Well, when people work with my children, I have a blood debt to them and I don't forget it. So it wasn't easy for me. And, I'm not ripping on the question. It was a good question, but I think people forget sometimes, and I've become a bit of a public figure, that people think that, you know, there is no emotional hit, but there is a bit of one. It was a tough time. It was a tough time for all of us. I hope that's enough.
Well, let's leave it on a positive note. And something that's really cool that came out earlier. Well, we're pre-recording this, but earlier, a couple weeks ago, I guess at this point, there's been, not to do too many plugs, but on, again, Laurie is at it again, On Target Publications. She put together a really cool bundle of a lot of your stuff to kind of like, you know, your one-stop shop. This is your weekend. This is two weekends. Buy this stuff. You know, you can check it out, watch the seminars over the weekend and get to reading and stuff.
Hey, could you put that on this? Could you put that on a link?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, Laurie Draper is amazing. I mean, if you go, I'm really proud of part of that On Target. I mean, you ever heard of Mike Boyle?
Michael Boyle in Woburn, right? In Boston?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
You know, okay, so Mike, Greg Hook, Dave Draper, of course. You go down that movement lecture thing. It is a who's – Mark Chang just came out with that new DVD. Yeah. I'm going to either call or email Mark today. I'm already stealing some of it. It's just a great thing. But it's just so coach and trainer friendly stuff, you know. She's touching areas. And the nice thing is, and if I'm wrong, Kevin, call me up. It's not very hypey, right?
No, there is no. It's basically a simple white product page that lists the products and like what's included in the seminar. I mean, that's why whenever she does throw stuff like on Facebook, I immediately share it with people just because it isn't a sales page. It's just here's the content and the, like you said, the people that she has to for the movement lectures and OTP. It's incredibly high quality stuff.
Well, and also too, I mean, like this is something we insisted, and we both insist on my page. You know, when you go to my page, I don't ask you for your email address or anything. You know, people like myself, I think Dave. And some of the others, I have a great debt to the industry, you know. Listen, I mean, I've said this 100 times, but I have an amazing education, and it was all paid for because people like Dick Notmeyer, Bob Lahati, my brothers, Coach Mon, allowed me to improve as an athlete. My entire education cost $10 because they couldn't waive the health fee. That's a lot of master's degrees. I was a Fulbright scholar. I've traveled all over the world. And it's because it's so for me to try to nickel and dime, I don't want to say, when I say inner circle, please no one take it personally. I'm just as an example. I don't have any of those things that, you know, I don't do any of that stuff. And Laurie, it really follows along in that belief too. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, you can check it out. Just go to otpbooks.com, and it's right on the front page there, but we'll also link to it in the show notes as well if you want to Just click on that while you're listening to this. We'll have both those in there. It's about 25% off of the package of the four products. So it's a pretty sweet deal. And I have them all on my shelf over there. And it's all stuff that we've watched in our staff meetings and we've read as a staff at NBSC too. So it's must-own.
At your staff meetings, when you watch my stuff, what would be some feedback you could give me?
I don't know. Maybe it's tough because Mike likes to. We'll watch like 5 or 10 minutes of a video. We'll stop and then we'll digest it, and then we end up like it takes us. I would say make shorter videos because for us personally, we do our staff meetings and we might get through 20 minutes of video in an hour because we do a lot of discussion and stuff like that. That's really not feedback. That's more of a us thing at NBSC, but we've been enjoying them. And like I said, we've kind of tossed those in every time they show up in the mail. So,
well, good. Yeah. I work hard, on this stuff, but I know my public presentations. I'm not the best looking guy in the world. I'm no Mike Boyle.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, you can make them 3D, make like the 3D version. We can get the glasses on and we can dim the lights and all that stuff. And it'll be like going to the movies. And then you could just like throw your arms out at the camera, maybe something like that. But they're already pretty energetic. And it's like, it's again, probably, why when we go to a Perform Better seminar, our whole staff is at the talk. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. Hey, there was a question from Gwen. She's the one who asked about the nicotine thing.
What's up with that? I didn't know if that was a joke or not.
Well, it is. Gwen, hello. I was supposed to not share. It was from my Chicago workshop. One of the things I want people to know is that we're constantly thinking things through here. I've been drug-free. I'm a drug-free guy. But one of the things I've got from a friend of mine, I won't mention who, so they don't have to get any static from it, is using nicotine patches to improve performance, especially when it comes to people who make a living by showing up at night and kicking your door down. The problem we're having with sleep debt is a big one. And so what we're trying to get, to be honest with you, it's like, if you're working with Major League Baseball, to be able to stay awake in August or September in the outfield is really tough. So traditionally they would use illegal drugs like amphetamines. Okay. And we're against that. Right. Well, one idea was this is we've been kind of kicking around is use the nicotine patches. They're not, I'm not at all telling any of your readers to try them, but it was just this thing that came up in the workshop. But I find it interesting because, the thing about a nicotine patch that's interesting is that, when I was growing up, every single adult I knew smoked. And all of them looked really good. And they all ate bacon lard. And you know where I'm heading on this. They smoked. Their breakfast was a cigarette. And I want you, your audience, to hear this. My dad, my dad fought in World War II, so did all my uncles. We lost a lot of family. And these guys, cup of coffee, a cigarette, so they were intermittent fasting. And then, when they did eat, they take bacon grease, and that's what you use for your and this generation of people were amazing. And here we are. And here I am today. I mentioned nicotine patches at a workshop. And honest to God, you think I said, I admitted I was a pedophile or axe murderer or something, And I just wanted to note that as we're kind of hamstrung as coaches, especially those of us who don't believe in the use of certain things, as trying to find ways around these problems. And it's been interesting because to improve one's writing skills, stick on a nicotine patch and do some of the best writing of your life. And it's funny because people like, oh my God, a nicotine patch. And they look at you like you just, farted in church, or whatever. So it's just an experiment. There's some. I don't personally get much use out of it. Doesn't help me. What helps me the most is the fact that I drink 700 cups of coffee a day. Pitchers of coffee a day. Mm. Yeah, but I backed. I was 1,000, so I'm backing off.
Making progress. That's good.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, I think we're coming up on our time. But we have 15 episodes away, and we're gonna have you back on.
Okay.
So we're talking like 15 weeks from now, which I guess almost gets us into the time where there isn't 18 feet of snow outside my house right now. So
that's great.
Hopefully,
you know, Kevin, your contributions to our industry are impressive, and you should be thanked. And I would like to do that.
No, this is the fun part. This is. I do this because I get to talk to you. I get to talk to all these people.
Kevin, take the compliment.
Thank you.
You have made a difference in our industry. What you're doing is, down the line, 20, 30, 40 years, well after my death, these words will live on and maybe help somebody long after both of us are dead, and you're making a difference. And I've appreciated you since the first time I met you.
Oh, thank you. Well, before I tear up, we're going to edit on that note. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Like I said, don't forget to check out optbooks.com for that special bundle deal. And until next time, I guess we'll see you next week.